1547, Michael Walker versus Donahoe.
Mr. Bryan, you there?
Yes, Your Honor. Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. Good to have you with us, sir.
Good to be with you. Thank you very much. May it please the court. Obviously, I'm John Bryan, and I'm honored here to represent Michael Walker in this case from Putnam County, West Virginia. Lawful firearm possession and use in West Virginia cannot alone form the basis of reasonable suspicion to perform a stop and investigatory detention of a pedestrian, period. Whether it's 8 minutes long with name calling, such as we had here, or whether it's 18 minutes long with polite and respectful treatment. The district court opined here that the open carry of an AR-15 in West Virginia is a quote, developing area of the law as courts face the expansion of open carry, end quote. But to the contrary, the legality of open carry in West Virginia is nothing new. It's not on the table at all. It cannot be disputed. United States versus Black was issued by this court 7 years ago, and the right to exercise the open carry of firearms has long been the law of West Virginia. In fact, the right to keep and bear arms for self-defense, hunting, and recreational use in West Virginia is expressly set forth in our West Virginia Constitution in Article 3, Section 22. In this case, Michael Walker was stopped, subjected to a detainment, including a background check, was called vulgar, obscene, and offensive names, all without having committed or even being suspected of committing criminal activity at all. He was just walking. The fact that he had a legal to possess rifle safely and non-threateningly strapped over his shoulder without more cannot be reasonable suspicion to support an investigatory detention.
How do you factor in the age issue? Because the defendant seems to be relying on that as one of its components of its argument.
As with a couple of other arguments made by the defendant in this case, the allegation that my client, Michael Walker, could have been or might have been underage really appeared nowhere in the objective facts in the record. So West Virginia Code Section 6178 prohibits minors under the age of 18 from carrying firearms. Now, the district court wrote in its opinion that although Walker was 24 at the time of the stop, his youthful appearance and the fact that he was walking rather than driving provided a basis for a reasonable officer to suspect that he was a minor. And my response to that is, Your Honor, that the video, and we have a video in this case, the video clearly shows that Michael Walker doesn't have a youthful appearance. In fact, he's...
It depends on how old you are, doesn't it?
And
you have a middle-aged police officer, you know, to somebody in their 20s, this guy clearly wasn't a teenager, but maybe to somebody in his 40s or 50s, he could have been.
This is no doubt an interesting defense that they came up with after the fact, but it must fail, and here's why. There's a couple reasons. One is, even if the court is going to go with a quote, youthful appearance, well, then the court is venturing into the territory of looking at a video and weighing the facts and performing the job of the jury. If we're going to decide if this is going to hinge on whether Mr. Walker had a youthful appearance, then we have a genuine issue of material fact, and summary judgment should not have been granted in favor of the defendant. We win on that issue in the procedure which we find ourselves in now. Now, secondly, I don't think that it's even a jury issue, because when you look at the defendant, officer or deputy Donahoe's testimony, this was discussed during his deposition. He was asked, did you observe Mr. Walker committing any crimes or anything illegal at that time, at the time of the stop? His answer was, at the time, I didn't know who he was other than just walking down the road. No, I don't know whether he can possess a gun or anything like that at that point. And so I asked
him. Well, he has to have reasonable suspicion, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And
that's the standard?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The officers get a lot of deference in these situations, Mr. Bryan.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you not know that?
I would argue they get too much deference, but this is
not. Well, I know, but they give a lot of, under the law, they get a lot of deference. In gray areas, we give them a long, we defer to them.
Well, if I guess we need to define deference, because that we're really now getting to the danger that we're facing if this is allowed to stand. And that is, yes, officers.
It was, this place, this thing was just up the road from the schoolhouse, wasn't it?
Your Honor, it was approximately a mile away from a school, and it only came up after the fact. There was no mention at the time of a school having anything to do with this stop. And I can explain.
But that's an objective fact. The location is the location.
That's true, Your Honor. The objective facts, as demonstrated by the defendant's own testimony, shows that the location has nothing to do with the school. In fact, if we're going to put a radius around any school, with the amount of schools that we have in this country, so we would have basically a no Fourth Amendment zone, a radius of decreased Fourth Amendment rights around every school.
And what does it make a difference, though, that the Parkland shooting had just occurred, and here you have a young person walking, young male, and those are the people who tend to shoot up schools, young men, walking with an AR-15 down a public highway. Why isn't that a factor?
That's a good question, Judge Keenan, and here is the answer to that. I would disagree with the fact that there is any objective fact in the record pertaining to anybody's suspicion that any school, that Michael Walker posed a threat to any school. And I'll explain why. Other than if we look at Google Earth and measure the distance that he was walking, eventually he would get to that school. But there was no basis in the record. A school was not mentioned by any party on the video, which captured the entire incident between the parties. But setting that aside, if he's going to claim, which he did, which I would argue is an irrational fear or a speculation rather than any particular fact about my client, but if he's going to claim that he was something, a potential copycat of the Parkland shooter, we can look at and see whether there's any similarities. Okay, Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland shooter.
How was this clown of yours dressed?
Well, you can see how he's dressed in the video. I believe he had.
Well, I'm asking you. I don't have the video in front of me. I'm asking you. I want you to tell me how he's dressed.
He was heading coyote hunting. I think he had maybe camouflage pants on or cargo pants on of some sort. He had a sweatshirt on, I believe. He had a backpack that was on his back, and then the rifle was safely strapped over his shoulder and pointed at the ground, I believe.
Is this an automatic rifle or a semi-automatic rifle?
This was an AR-15 style semi-automatic rifle, completely legal.
Did the officer know whether it was automatic or semi-automatic?
He didn't allege that he had any basis for suspecting that it was an automatic rifle.
He wouldn't know, would he, unless he checked it. AR-15, if this was an AR-15, I guess it was. They know now. They're capable, you flip a switch and you make them automatic, right? Or you can put a bump stock on them and make them automatic.
Well, what's happened in this case is
It would be absolutely illegal. If it was an automatic rifle, it would be illegal, wouldn't it?
No, I mean, AR-15s are the most commonly owned.
If it's rifle. An automatic, it's a machine gun. Correct.
No, Your Honor, there's there's no basis for the facts in this case to support any speculation, and that's all that this would be, that this could have been a machine gun. The fact is that the West Virginia legislature authorizes its citizens to possess, which includes openly carrying, AR-15 style rifles, which are perfectly legal under West Virginia law. So he was, there can be no dispute that he was carrying something that day that he was authorized under West Virginia law to carry. And West Virginia law also through our
legislature. And after the officer ascertained that, he sent him on his way. What was it, 7 minutes later?
Well, I see what you're getting at, Judge King, but here's the problem with that argument is that defendant Donahoe never even looked at this AR-15 style rifle to examine whether or not it could be a machine gun, you know, which can be lawfully owned in West Virginia so long as the possessor has an NFA stamp that they paid $200 for or whatever.
Counsel, can I ask a scope of your challenge question, if you would? Did you before the district court, and do you on this appeal challenge the scope or duration of the stop as opposed to the stop itself? I read your argument to be challenging the stop itself, right? The seizure, and not, you know, bringing the sort of distinct challenge of even if the stop itself was appropriate, it extended too long or covered topics that were inappropriate and unlawfully prolonged the stop. Is that fair? Now, you know, I'm asking because I want to be sure we understand the nature of your claim.
That is fair, Judge Richardson. And in fact, I think that this is often conflated, and I believe it was also conflated by the district court, who brought up during the motions hearing at the summary judgment hearing that, well, even if this was an illegal stop, it was only 8 minutes long and it's probably reasonable. And here's the problem with that is, yeah, we're contesting the entire stop, the fact that the stop occurred. And we don't need to even look at whether or not it was reasonable or the duration or the scope, because under the binding precedent of this court, United States versus Black from 2013, that stop, just by virtue of the fact that it took place, is by definition under our case law unreasonable.
I appreciate that. I just want to make that clear. Can you also respond just a minute, if you would, on even if you've got a reasonable argument here, why you get over the qualified immunity hurdle? Except that maybe you got a close case on the merits. But doesn't that put us in that gray area that qualified immunity bars going forward here?
Your Honor, I would disagree that there is a close case for qualified immunity in this case. Now, while it is true that qualified immunity is much more likely to apply or be granted in a Fourth Amendment search and seizure context, this was just so far beyond the pale that there's no argument there. And here's why. United States versus Black, again, a 2013 case, is directly on point. Directly on point to what happened.
I want you to talk about Black, but do you agree that that's the best case that you've got for the qualified immunity analysis? That to the extent we find it readily distinguishable from this case, that it makes your qualified immunity argument much harder?
Again, Your Honor, I would argue that qualified immunity just can't be granted in this case. You know, if there's a clearly established law out there, if there's clearly established case law of which defendant Donahoe or any police officer at this time should have been aware of, it's United States versus Black. And that is, I mean, it goes to the heart of the Fourth Amendment and the Bill of Rights in particular, because if the entire
Black is very different factually from this case, Mr. Bryan, isn't it? I mean, in Black, you had the situation where the officer essentially went after the guy, grabbed his wrist, tried to handcuff him. And that's when he found the metal object under the clothing. You know, Black wasn't, it seems to me that, you know, the only thing the officer had to point to was Black became fidgety, right? Began looking left and right. And the officer concluded he might be trying to flee during the time the officer was trying to process his identification. So it was really a different type of context, wasn't it, than what we have here? You know, we don't have any hands-on in this case. We don't have the officer roughing anybody up. The officer was very rude. There's no doubt about it. And when you look at the tape, your client was very polite the whole time. I mean, you have an imbalance in terms of, social interaction. But in terms of Black, how can we say that Black has to govern when the facts of Black were just so different?
Yes, Your Honor, I'm having some trouble understanding my timer here. It's now counting in the opposite direction. I take that to mean that I'm out of my original time scheduled for this portion. Is it okay if I go ahead
You are out of time, but you have 5 minutes of rebuttal reserved, and you can take as much as that 5 minutes as you want and use it now.
Well, I'll go ahead and answer this question. I think this is an important question, Judge Keenan, and this is very much like United States versus Black. And in fact, I would argue we have even better facts than Black did. Now, Black, the whole point of it was that we can't allow a subjective hunch theory by a police officer, because doing that allows just the sort of evils that the Fourth Amendment and all of our federal case law for the Fourth Amendment is meant to prevent. For instance, high crime neighborhoods and investigatory detentions of African Americans just because they're armed, treating them differently. And that is exactly the sort of thing that we have in this case. There's a neighborhood speculation. So instead of high crime neighborhood like Black, here we have, the sort of area that you don't usually see someone, you know, going hunting, or it's within a mile of a school. So that component is very much like Black. And then you have the other fact that, like West Virginia, North Carolina is legal to open carry. And that fact is same here. And lastly, I would argue just briefly that if you look at the facts in the record, when I questioned Defendant Donahoe, he said he didn't know Michael Walker from Adam, knew nothing about him, didn't know of any allegation that he had committed any crime, didn't observe him committing any crime, which, by the way, would also apply to the later allegation that he was too young. But this was merely the possession of that firearm. And he said the only reason he stopped them to get his ID is to be able to run his background check and see if he was a convicted felon and therefore could not possess that firearm. But like Judge Gregory wrote in the Black decision, being a felon in the possession of a firearm is not the default status. Where a state permits individuals to open carry firearms, the exercise of that right without more cannot justify an investigatory detention. Permitting such a justification would eviscerate the Fourth Amendment protections for lawfully armed individuals in those states. Thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Bryan. Mr. Strider?
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Adam Strider, and I represent Officers Donahoe and Pauley in the matter now before the court. The district court made three primary holdings, all of which we urge should be upheld. First, that reasonable suspicion existed for the stop on two bases. Second, that the scope and duration of the stop were reasonable. And third, failing the first two, that the pre-existing case law environment at the time of the stop was not such that a reasonable officer would be on notice, that a stop under these circumstances would be unlawful. Now,
so before you get started, I asked your colleague this, and since you raised the second point about the scope and duration,
Sure.
I didn't read that to be part of the challenge that Mr. Walker was bringing here. And I understand the district court said that, but is there a reason to think that that's actually before us?
No, apart from the fact that it was part of the district court's ruling, and to the extent that it's being challenged here, if it is, then we would contend that the district court was correct there. The first basis.
It was part of the totality of circumstances.
That's correct. The first basis was a reasonable belief that Mr. Walker could have been carrying underage, which is a misdemeanor in West Virginia, and it's not. As Mr. Bryan was trying to frame it, it's not solely based on his appearance, which perception of age based on appearance is subject to reasonable disagreement anyway. But additionally, Mr. Walker was walking in an area rather than driving in an area where foot traffic is uncommon, and younger people are less likely to have a driver's license or own a car. And also, he was wearing a backpack in close proximity to a school. And that's a factor that was considered by the First Circuit in Clark versus Daly, which was a case where
was this a private school?
It is. It's a private school.
And did they wear uniforms?
I don't know.
This defendant was wearing a black sleeveless shirt in the beginning of February, right?
He was wearing a black shirt and camouflage pants.
Sleeveless shirt in West Virginia in the beginning of February. District court though didn't seem to make any particular note of that, did it?
Didn't comment on the lack of sleeves, no. Mm-hmm. But carrying a backpack in proximity to a school is similar to the fact that in Clark versus Daly, the First Circuit found that it was significant that the individual who was stopped on suspicion that he possessed alcohol while underage. Was present in a college student heavy neighborhood in an area with a large concentration of underage people. Now, we haven't found any case precedent in the Fourth Circuit which would suggest that an officer cannot demand proof of ID when they see someone engaged in an age-controlled activity and have the facts at issue here to form a basis that they might be underage. But extra jurisdictional persuasive case.
Well, officer can ask anybody for their ID, can he?
Well, that's correct. But West Virginia,
they might be able to say no, but he's certainly entitled to ask questions.
Well, that's correct. But the case law from extra, West Virginia is not a stop and identify state, but neither is Michigan, neither is Massachusetts. Which are the extra jurisdictional cases which give us the persuasive precedent that an officer can detain someone to examine their identification to determine that they're of age. Now logically there is no other evidence of being underage than your appearance, your environment, your conduct. So if youthful appearance, if presence in an area with a high concentration of underage people, doesn't amount to reasonable suspicion to believe someone's underage.
Why wouldn't we think that actually open carrying as opposed to concealed carrying is suggestive that you are of age, right? I mean, the fact that you're sort of like openly carrying a gun, you know, people don't tend to sort of carry their you know, narcotics, so that they're seen. They don't tend to carry contraband so that it's seen. So why doesn't that actually sort of cut the opposite direction?
I don't think it does, because that would set a precedent that if you brazenly break laws that it suggests that your conduct is legal. And I don't think that's a rule that we want to establish.
Well, it's just a rule of common sense, right? That if you see somebody, you know, at a laundromat with a large bag of white powder, like you don't assume that it's cocaine, right? I mean, I don't think it's a rule. I'm just saying it's a matter of common sense. When we see people carrying guns openly, we tend to think that they're people that are perfectly capable and allowed to do so. Not, no?
I don't think that that's necessarily true. Someone who is just because they're obviously breaking the law doesn't cut against the idea that they might be breaking the law. Now, the second basis for reasonable suspicion was a suspicion of a threat to the community, and this was based on the fact that Mr. Walker was traveling on foot towards a school in a suburban residential neighborhood. Now, Mr. Bryan has made a big deal about the fact that open carry is legal in West Virginia, and it is. AR-15s are legal to possess and facially legal to carry, but reasonable suspicion doesn't require the obvious commission of a crime in the officer's presence. That's probable cause. It's if the totality of the circumstances suggest that there might there's a reasonable possibility of an imminent crime and prevention of imminent crimes, as the Supreme Court stated in United States versus Socolow, is a reasonable basis to for suspicion for an investigatory stop. And the open carry laws don't create an affirmative right. They're just the absence of a prohibition. The West Virginia doesn't have a statute saying that open carry is legal and there's nothing suspicious about carrying a gun anywhere. It's just like any other non-prohibited object. And that, by way of analogy, the Sixth Circuit in a per curiam opinion in United States versus Ivy found reasonable suspicion where a man was loitering outside of a gas station holding a golf club. To my knowledge, every state is an open carry golf club state. There's nothing unlawful about holding a golf club outside of a gas station, but it's a sufficiently novel appearance of that object, and it's an object that could be used as a weapon. And in that context, it's more, it eliminates a lot of potential innocent conduct to the point that we're left with what's probable is that either something unlawful is going on or something weird is going on. And that's what gives rise to reasonable suspicion. Now, the totality of the facts here are that Mr. Walker is dressed in a manner which is evocative of kind of a militia motif. He's carrying an uncased AR-15 across his back, walking down the side of a road in a suburban residential neighborhood toward a school, and we don't have on the record the exact distance that he was from the school, but it was between a mile, a half mile, an 8 to 10 minute walk.
I thought Mr. Bryan said a mile, didn't he?
He said a mile. Estimates have varied, a mile, a half mile, a quarter mile. It was walking
distance. It was the Taze Valley Christian School was the name of it. And this was less than a week from the Parkland shooting in Florida.
It is. And the reason that that's significant is that the Parkland
and Judge shooting Chambers, was, Judge Chambers recited all that in his opinion.
That's correct. And the reason that that's significant is that the Parkland shooting so saturated national media coverage, the way that it was carried out, the details of it, that not only does this put in the heads of would-be, does this demonstrate to would-be shooters that this kind of activity generates this kind of national notoriety, but it also essentially gives a how-to manual. It shows what kind of a gun kills this many people in this short of a time period.
Did the shooter in Parkland have an AR-15?
He did, Your Honor. As did the shooter in Sandy Hook, as did the shooter in Pulse Nightclub, as did the shooter in Las Vegas. It is the hallmark gun of mass shootings, which is why
it was developed as a military weapon by the U.S. Army for the infantry, was it not?
I don't know if that's true or not, but it is evocative.
It functions
essentially the same way as a military rifle.
If Judge King suggests something about history, you should just agree with him.
Noted, Your Honor. But the fact that it's lawful is not a prohibition on it contributing to reasonable suspicion. Different guns have different uses and they draw different implications in different contexts. If you are to take the the situation in the United States versus Black, and it's part of one of the reasons why it's so distinguishable from this case, is that the individual who was open carrying in Black was carrying a handgun in a holster on his hip. Now, the inference there is derived from the fact that carrying a handgun in a holster on your hip is a common practice among people who carry firearms as a matter of course for self-defense. An AR-15 is a big unwieldy weapon. It's not a traditional carry weapon for self-defense. It's also not traditionally used for hunting. And furthermore, this is February, which is not a major hunting season. Mr. Walker wasn't wearing blaze orange, and this area would be unsuitable for hunting anyway. So you have this elimination or improbability of a large portion of potential innocent conduct, and you're left with, this is either something concerning unlawful or it's something unusual. And being unusual is not illegal, but when something is either unusual or it's unlawful, that's where investigatory stops are warranted. To touch a little more on Black, first, the one of the big reasons Black
is- Judge Chambers knew all about Black too, did he? You all talked about that to him over there.
Judge Chambers ran down the facts of Black and why this is differentiable. And a big reason is that United States versus Black was not a 1983 case. It was an appeal of a motion to suppress. So qualified immunity wasn't an issue in that case. And the second is that Mr. Black, the defendant in United States versus Black, was not openly carrying. Mr. Black was searched because another person in his group was openly carrying, and then a second person in the group the officers knew to have a history of arrests. So the top line ruling in Black was that there's no reasonable suspicion by association. And the other holding of Black is that reasonable suspicion doesn't arise from the presence of a firearm standing alone without more. And the district court acknowledged that and acknowledged that that's the rule, but found that here there is more.
In this case is all about the more, and that's the whole thing.
All about the more. In Black, the conduct that was observed was that this gentleman was sitting in a car at a gas pump for an indeterminate amount of time and then drove to an apartment building and approached a group of people. The officers claimed that that was indicative of a drug transaction, and this court found that that was an unwarranted inference to draw. So the fact of the gun was standing alone. Here, the fact of the gun is not standing alone. You have the concern, which I don't know that there needs to be a detailed explanation of why it's concerning that someone appears to be, or at least why it's concerning to anyone who has paid attention to the news over the past decade, why it would be concerning that someone appears to be approaching a school with an AR-15 rifle. But even if this court comes to the conclusion here that the more isn't here, that rhetorically begs the question of what is the more? And that doesn't seem to have been, at least in our review of the case law, established in this circuit in a binding way. Now, the best guidance available to the officers for what constitutes more comes from outside the circuit, from the district court cases in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and the Sixth Circuit case out of Tennessee that we cited in our brief, where those courts held that reasonable suspicion existed in cases like this, that came to the general conclusion that where a display of firearms is novel and alarming in context, that reasonable suspicion for an investigatory stop arises, even in an open carry state. Tennessee, Michigan, and Pennsylvania are all open carry states. Now, it might be the case, the court might say at the end of this case, that heading towards a high school, half quarter mile away, 10 walking distance, isn't close enough to be alarming, or this conduct doesn't amount to enough to be alarming. But that rhetorically begs the question of what does. In Maciarella versus Sumner, this court said that qualified immunity, to overcome qualified immunity, a right can't simply be established in the abstract. It has to be established in its particularized application. And also that officers are liable for crossing bright lines, not for bad guesses in gray areas. Now, here there does not appear to have been drawn a bright line for the officers to cross, because we don't know what, in a binding manner, haven't been informed by this court, at least before now, what, in addition to the presence of a firearm, has to be there before reasonable suspicion exists to stop someone openly carrying, and that's the legal environment in which qualified immunity.
You don't want this case decided on qualified immunity, though, do you? You want it decided on the fact there's no constitutional violation.
No, our primary argument is that reasonable suspicion existed for this stop, based both on a reasonable belief that Mr. Walker could have been underage, and based on a reasonable belief that he could have posed a threat to the community generally and the school in particular. But failing that, in the alternative, we'd argue that qualified immunity applies here, and the district court did make that alternative holding, that even if a constitutional violation had occurred, the qualified immunity would still bar the suit. Now, to go back to the question of, the point that AR-15s are lawful to own, lawful objects in different contexts, you can draw different inferences from lawful objects in different contexts. If you walk into a ski lodge wearing a ski mask, nobody's going to bat an eye. If you walk into a bank wearing a ski mask, it's pretty hard to argue there's not reasonable suspicion there. Or to go with Judge Richardson's analogy earlier, someone with a large bag of white powder at the laundromat probably doesn't have cocaine. Someone who has a large bag of white powder in their car during a traffic stop, well, we're a little less certain. Unless the court has more questions, we believe that the holdings of the district court should stand. The reasonable suspicion existed for the stop. The scope and duration of the stop were reasonable, and they were minimally invasive, and they were balanced against what is properly a grave concern for the safety of the community, and that failing that, qualified immunity should apply.
Thank you, Mr. Strider. We appreciate it. Mr. Bryan, you've saved a couple of minutes.
Mr. Bryan, I'd like to ask you kind of a kickoff question. I think the real important takeaway here from Mr. Strider's presentation is that lawfulness does not mean that lawful behavior can contribute to reasonable suspicion combined with other factors. So why don't we have those other factors in this case? Just focusing on the lawfulness of possessing the gun, Mr. Strider is saying, isn't enough. Could you address that?
Yes, that's a good question, Your Honor, and it's a fascinating topic. There is some conflicting case law, even from the Supreme Court, in this. I think the important distinction is that, yes, it's possible for otherwise legal observances to together, looking at the totality of the circumstances, to form reasonable suspicion. However, there still has to be some reasonable suspicion that there's an underlying crime somewhere. And that's the difference in this case, is this is literally falls within the holding of Black, because there is no more. All there is possession of that firearm. And it's there was nothing about a school that can be seen or heard on that video that had nothing to do with it. It came out after the fact once lawyers were involved on the defense side. Now,
you agree, counsel, you agree it's an objective inquiry under Wren. We're not looking at a subjective inquiry. So the fact that the officer doesn't mention that on the videotape is neither here nor there, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, the reasonable suspicion analysis itself is an objective one, as per the Ashcroft case from the Supreme Court 2011. Now, the argument that this defendant Donahoe had some alleged heightened concern over a potential mass shooting copycat incident due to proximity of the Parkland shooting, that fails to comply with that standard, because it's entirely subjective rather than objective. And that makes our case. It's irrelevant to an objective analysis. These subjective hunch type theories have been repeatedly shot down, including by this court. In fact, they were expressly forbidden by the holding of United States versus Black. And this, if the court were to rule in favor of the appellees here on this issue, this would completely go against the central tenet of United States versus Black. And in fact, the district court acknowledged that. I mean, the district court said that the district court acknowledged that, yes, there has to be more. You know, just possession of a firearm in a state that allows its citizens to possess firearms cannot by itself without more form reasonable suspicion to perform an investigatory detention. Now, the court wanted a more analysis on what more is, and it expressly wants to include AR-15s in that. And that's a complete red herring in this case. This had nothing to do in the underlying case about attacking AR-15s or declaring them to be, you know, anyone in possession of an AR-15 to be a potential school shooter. I mean, that's just what's outrageous about what happened here. It's because it had nothing to do with it. And in fact, I would request it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Your Honor.
You know, Mr. Ryan, I haven't heard you say anything during your whole presentation about the fact that this all started with a 911 call from a concerned citizen. Can't that be something that the officer is acting in response to and be a legitimate consideration? Along with, you know, his community policing responsibilities here, a citizen has made a 911 call based on this guy walking around with a semi-automatic rifle on a public highway?
Yes, Your Honor, that's a good question. The underlying facts of this case, if you look at what I've put in our brief, an excerpt from the deposition transcripts of me questioning defendant Donahoe, he admits that there is no, that he doesn't know who the 911 caller was or what the actual complaint was. He admits that he had no information that Michael Walker had committed any crime. The only information he had, which wasn't information, was his speculation that, well, he could be a felon and therefore a prohibited person under state and federal law. And
in fact, he goes on. You're saying the 911 call really has nothing to do with our analysis here.
No, there's nothing in the record to substantiate a finding of reasonable suspicion from the 911 call. It theoretically could if the facts were different, but he said he didn't even know what the 911 caller said. And that's common in open carry calls, is it's just somebody that is scared of guns or doesn't know that open carry is legal in West Virginia, and they just call 911. And so he had no information at the time that he stopped him. It was merely
the fact that it's legal in West Virginia doesn't mean people aren't going to be scared when they see somebody walking around with looking dangerous to them.
Yes, Your Honor, but that's irrelevant to the reasonable suspicion standard. I believe I'm out of time now.
And anonymous tips are used by police officers every day.
Yes, that's
anyway,
correct.
I've been very liberal. You got more than 5 minutes that you've reserved, and I gave you some extra time too. Give you another 30 seconds to wrap it all up.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm glad that you brought up, you know, the 911 caller and potential tips to police, because we have a wealth of case law out there from the United States Supreme Court on third party tips to police. So here, even though we have no information on what the tip was, whether it was a tip and who the caller was, we don't even have information. And we can look at Illinois versus Gates from 1983, or Florida versus JL from 2000, or Navarette versus California from 2014. If you look at these cases, you have to look at the totality of the circumstances to see even if a third party tip is reliable enough for a police officer to stop somebody. And in fact, Florida versus JL 2000, the Supreme Court held that an officer may not stop and frisk someone based solely on an anonymous tip that described the person's location and appearance, but contain no details about any illegal conduct in which that person was participating or had participated. So I'll leave you with this, Your Honors. I appreciate the additional time and one last sentence here. And as Judge Gregory noted in his opinion from United States versus Black, He said, in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we're reminded that, quote, we are tied together in a single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, that our individual freedom is inextricably bound to the freedom of others. Thus, we must ensure that the Fourth Amendment rights of all individuals are protected. So even if somebody has an irrational fear of firearms, whether it's a 911 caller or whether it's this police officer, we can't allow those individuals to eviscerate the rights of the rest of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bryan. Good to have both of you with us. If we were in Richmond, we'd come down and shake hands with you and tell you personally we'd good to have you there, and you did a good job, but maybe next year we'll be there. Thanks so much.
Look forward to it, Your Honor.
Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Madam Clerk, we'll adjourn court for the day, and the judges will go into conference.
This honorable court stands adjourned until tomorrow morning. God save the United States and this honorable court.